to On the Record with Furniture Today, a podcast that goes behind the headlines to look at the news and the newsmakers, the people and the personalities that give the furniture industry its unique flavor. I'm your host, Bill McLaughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Furniture Today.
Good morning. I'm Tom Russell, Senior Editor of Furniture Today. I am filling in as a guest here on our On the Record podcast. And this morning, I'm here with Luke Simpson, the President and CEO of Canadian-based case goods manufacturer Durham Furniture.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Luke. Thank you so much for taking time. We all know this is a hugely busy time for everybody, and I'm just glad that you're able to take some time to be with us this morning.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity. It's always exciting to talk about what's going on, and always good to see you.
Thank you very much. Well, I've always enjoyed covering Durham Furniture, particularly with your solid wood story, your custom finishing capability, just many different custom capabilities, and you know, as we were thinking about doing this podcast, I thought, you know, this would be a great one because this is an exciting year for Durham. It is the company's 120th anniversary. And tell me a little bit about what we can expect this year in terms of any type of, like, special events or things that you all have planned in honor of this landmark achievement.
Sure. So, yeah, 120 years, which will officially happen about this October market, would be the anniversary date. We got a lot of things that we're working on to try to get done this year. Social media is going to be a really big part of it. It's never been a huge part of our advertising model, if you will, but we're really pushing that with some help. We're going to be telling our 120 year history in pictures on social media. We've kind of started that, and that's going to carry on through. One thing that we're doing for April market is we're reintroducing, I guess, what has been our probably bestseller since 1997. So we've updated it with new finishes, with some functionalities, soft closed drawer guides instead of wood. So, you know, we're showcasing that. What else are we doing? We're going to, we've got a new tagline and a new logo for the year that's been designed for us. That's going to be pushed on everything. And, you know, we're working for October. We don't have things totally set yet, but we're definitely working for an anniversary collection that'll be introduced in October. Mm-hmm. And as well as an event probably around the October market that'll be at our showroom.
Yeah.
So yeah, lots of exciting things and lots to do.
Yeah, well, that's great. And I think the social media aspect is certainly pretty interesting too, because I think you all do a good job on social media already, and there's just a lot to talk about when you're 120 years old. You're talking about the photos, and you know, it must have been kind of a process to kind of go through some of the archives, you know, and find all that stuff.
It was, and you know, we were fortunate that throughout the years at varying times the company did some really good newsletters. So we had a wealth of history and of pictures to work with, and it's been fun going back through them, you know, reading some of the stories in them that are talking about grandparents of people that are still working in the place.
Wow.
Like, it's just, yeah, it all ties together.
Yeah.
You know, so one of the things we're doing with some of those is we're devoting a room in our showroom. We're putting up a timeline. We're gonna display our 120 year story to date, with a bunch of those photos and key events throughout, and then on the social media side as well, we're gonna kick off a contest this April market, and I think we're gonna look to have a couple, you know, pretty high level contests. I hope to get some involvement.
People like all that stuff too. They really do. And the timeline is a great way to tell the story, because you can kind of focus on, key dates and events, and help people visualize.
And we've certainly had several of them over 120.
Of course. Well, with a company that's 120 years old, I mean that's impressive from any way you look at it. I think that makes you probably one of the oldest, if not the oldest, case goods bedroom manufacturers in North America. I mean,
it's that's a difficult one to really tack down. Yeah. So we're not going to make that claim, but we know we're up there for sure.
Well, how does a company pull that off? I mean, especially in today's environment, you've got like all this competition. I mean, not just from Asia, but also to some degree domestically. I mean, there's the Amish producers. You know, there's still some U.S. companies that are doing domestic production. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of stay competitive and kind of keep going in that competitive landscape?
And that is a good question, and it's an ongoing thing. You know, it's constantly reinventing yourself, I think. Mm-hmm. Over the years, Durham's been really fortunate, I think. You know, they've been in the right place at the right time in some cases. They've had the right people at different times. Orville Mead was the president in the late 90s when Durham really, really made a push in the U.S. And that was very successful. They've always continually invested in technology to try to keep at the front edge. It's about productivity. The one thing that's been true though from day one is really it's the product and it's the quality. And that's, you know, that's still what we push today, because first and foremost you have to have a quality product.
Yes.
And then you have to have the right styles for it.
And it seems like too you all do a good job telling that story, you know, from the drawer construction to the, just the overall depth of the finishes. You could almost look at the product and say, well, yeah, this is a solid wood case, you know, just by seeing it.
That's right. You really can tell if you know anything at all about it. You just visually, and finishes are one of our strong points for sure. Mm-hmm. We only work with solid wood, so we've got a great palette to put our finishes on. Mm-hmm. And we're constantly working on improving them, introducing new ones, trying to keep up with trends that are coming up or already in the marketplace.
Sure. Well, tell us a little bit about what brought you to the company. You've been with the company since early 2015.
Yeah, about April 2015. I joined the company as their VP of finance. It was kind of by accident. I mean, I didn't wake up one day and say, you know, I should probably get involved in the furniture industry, because I'm not sure many people would say that.
No, not today. So,
but it was from a former career. I had got involved with the company in a consulting capacity, which so often happens. I was a business and finance, and I was doing some consulting for them on a particular problem that they had. Mm-hmm. And you know, just over the course of, that would have been probably 2013, 20 or so. And, you know, kept in touch with a few of the people, mm-hmm. Got to know some of the owners, mm-hmm. some of the board members, just kind of became friends. And then really the opportunity kind of came up in 2015. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I looked at it and just the area where we live, it's all a bunch of small towns, and,
sure.
and it was a really good fit location-wise to where I live.
Yes.
And you know, it seemed like the kind of the next step, the next adventure.
Are you from that area originally?
I am, yeah. I'm from a small town that is about 45 minutes from Durham.
Okay, yeah. So, and Durham in relation to Toronto, it's about an hour?
It's about 2 hours.
2 hours, yeah.
West of Toronto, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of right in the middle of southwestern Ontario.
Yeah, I see. Do a lot of the materials that you use come from Canadian hardwoods, or do you bring them in from like U.S. or?
It's both. We use as much as we can that is local.
Yeah.
As long as we're able to get it in a sustainable manner.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, it's probably 70%, I think, is the latest number I heard.
Yeah.
But we do bring a lot of cherry in from the U.S. as well. Yeah.
So maple is one of your biggest species. Canadian, probably maple largely.
Exactly. Yeah. And that comes from across Canada too. It's
yeah,
not necessarily
sure.
just Ontario, but.
Well, it's a great material. I know that it finishes well. Yeah. We hear a lot of people saying good things about that. So it seems sort of like really fits well within your framework, it seems like.
Yeah, exactly. The two species. And we've, over the years, we've tried a lot of different species. And it's recently, just with the finishes we're looking at, it's maple and cherry are the ones that we've really settled on. They're readily available.
Sure. And sustainable, too.
They're indeed. Not as expensive as necessarily some of the more exotic woods. So it's always a factor, too.
Sure. Now, obviously, you must have done something right, because by the end of the year, you were really the successor to Gord Dilworth in the president and CEO role of 2015. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It was really only about 6 months that I was there. And again, it was really a circumstantial and a timing thing.
Sure.
Gord had kind of expressed his desire to step back. He was he'd been there a number of years in that role, and he'd been in the industry a long time, and really it was Durham was at the point where they needed some new direction, kind of a fresh set of eyes and kind of a change, if you will. So
sure, was that a role that surprised you? In other words, like a year or two before, would you have considered that you would have been in that role?
No, not at all. That was the thing. It just kind of organically happened.
Sure.
Like I said, even when I went there went to Durham as VP of Finance, I never said, well, I'll go there and then I'll be the CEO. Eventually that wasn't even necessarily the plan at that time. So,
well, it's good. I mean, you're. I was looking at your background, and a lot of accounting, finance specific in different realms, including logistics. What is it about your background, particularly in accounting, that has kind of helped you in this leadership position none other but a furniture manufacturer? How has that kind of helped them, and what skills do you think you brought to the table to help them not only succeed but just stay competitive on sort of a long-term basis?
Yeah, so the finance side, the business side, really cost accounting, so understanding your costs from the beginning to the end, understanding where you can eliminate those costs so that you can stay competitive on it from a pricing standpoint and from a profitability standpoint, just the ability to understand financial statements and everything that go into them. The logistics side, while I was in the finance role in the logistics, you learn a lot. And as you know, our product and furniture in general, it's big, it's bulky. It doesn't transport well. It's expensive to transport. So any opportunity you have there to shave a few dollars off of that and get it delivered quickly and safely, that helps. So the connections that I had there. But ironically, I think that it's probably the fact that I wasn't from the furniture industry that's helped me the most. I got kind of a free pass, if you will, to ask what some people might think are some pretty stupid questions. Like, why are we doing this? Because, you get certain people have been doing things for so long a certain way.
Yes.
So I had the ability to ask why, and all of a sudden I had people at the plant really starting to try to answer the question. And if they couldn't give me an answer to it, then all of a sudden we'd realize, well, maybe there's a different way to do it.
Yeah.
So that's been fun too.
So there's an inquisitive part of your nature that really helps. Seems like it helps the company get a better understanding, seeing things kind of from maybe a little bit of from the outside looking in.
Exactly. Yeah. I try to be very inquisitive. I always want to know why we're doing something.
Yeah. Are you satisfied with the answers you get from that question?
If I am, then that's great. But if I'm not, then that leads us down a road to changing something, exploring, if if you're only doing that because that's what we've always done,
yeah,
then maybe we need to look at why we're doing it at all.
Do you get much pushback at all? Or I mean,
oh, constantly. I mean,
it's probably like every other company.
Yeah, and you know, no, but people don't like change.
Yes,
we're, you know, we're
it's human nature.
We're in a small town.
Yeah,
and some of the and you know we have employees that have been there over 50 years.
Yeah,
and if you want to change something, it's tough. So you really got to be careful how you do it. You know,
yeah.
You got to get the buy-in of everybody.
Yeah.
But once you have that,
yes,
then it's amazing how easy it can be.
And you've made changes. I mean, I got the privilege of getting to see the factory, and for the first time a couple of years ago, this month, in fact. You know, it was interesting to me to see, you know, for the first time, just the different things you were doing from a warehousing perspective, from a parts inventory perspective. Can you say how that kind of worked in a nutshell?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't very long after I was there. I started in April of 2015, and January of 2016, we introduced an ERP system to our manufacturing floor.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the catalyst for almost everything else. There, you know, mm-hmm. that was what really got us visibility into the movement of all of our parts through the plant,
mm-hmm.
what we had for inventory from a WIP perspective. And that was really, that was about 4 or 5 months of my life that I would like to forget, because it just wasn't fun. Anybody that's done it just will agree.
We hear a lot of horror stories about that type of process.
You can cripple a business if it doesn't go well.
Wow.
We came out the other side in pretty good shape. So, you know, so that was probably the first indication that people at the plant got that things were going to change significantly.
Mm-hmm.
What that really allowed us to do then was we had the company had a model of storing finished goods,
mm-hmm.
And selling from those. But as we, you know, as our product evolves, you know, as we offer 50 finishes on everything, the warehousing model doesn't work because you're guessing at what someone's going to buy. But at the same time, you want to be cognizant of getting them the product on time or as quick as possible. So we worked at this model that said, well, we're going to get rid of our finished goods largely.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to move everything backwards and store it as parts.
Yeah.
And we're only going to build to sold orders. So, you know, that was probably a year and a half process to really make that kind of all work. But, you know, we come out the other side and we were successful. We reduced lead time to our consumers by about 2 weeks.
Wow.
We reduced finished goods inventory to the point where it's all but gone today, and
wow.
we can still get people what they want.
Yeah.
In fact, we're actually at the end of April, we're done with our offsite warehouse, and we're going to be shipping directly out of our factory.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think
we've got that far.
Yeah, wow.
Because
that offsite warehouse, I think you showed me. We drove past it, and so that's another. Sounds like another efficiency that you've really been able to accomplish since I was there.
Yeah.
Last.
Yeah, we're just, you know, we're constantly picking away at it. Just last week, actually, we made another big step. We've bought in cardboard boxes for our product and put them in. And just last week we had a cardboard box making machine installed.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, that, and that's another thing. We get rid of our cardboard inventory. We free up all the space that it takes.
Yeah.
Which has allowed us then to do some warehousing on site.
Oh, I see.
So it's kind of all part of it.
It's kind of value added, it sounds like,
yeah,
in terms of utilization of space.
But it's, you know, and it's just another change that it took a while to get everybody on board with.
Yeah.
But you know, now they're not even a week into it. They're not sure how they could have lived without it.
Do you get to bring customers up there to tour the facility, to show them the Durham process and all that?
We do as much as we can. We have great success with our Canadian customers,
yeah,
particularly the local ones.
Sure.
But we've had several others make their way up from the U.S. Mm-hmm. We always welcome it, and it's something we're working to do more of. Because it really, you know, from a sales associate standpoint on the floor, when they see what goes into making our furniture, it really helps them understand the value that's in it.
Yes.
And improves their ability to sell it.
Yes, I think they probably get a good understanding of what you do, but also the videos that you've done in-house and show in your showroom, I think I've seen some of those, and they seem to tell a pretty good story too.
Yeah.
For those that can't get up to the factory.
Exactly, because we're not the most conveniently located place, as you could attest to.
Yes, but it was still worth it to make the trip, for sure.
Yeah.
What is it that you most like most about the industry? Coming into the industry, sort of from the outside, what is it that you like the most, and what do you see as sort of the most maybe challenging, perhaps, about the industry that's not as fun?
Well, the most fun part is the people.
Yes.
And that's right across the board. I mean, I can start with the people at the plant because we have some characters. As I said, we've got third and fourth generation in the plant. We've got married couples in the plant. We've got a whole group that are 14 of them are related. They're cousins or they're this, and you know.
Yeah. So,
and that's great. It's been fun getting to know them. And then externally, it's been just as much fun getting to know the people in the industry. Because there are some fantastic people, and being an industry I knew very little about, that's been the way to succeed as well. Getting to know people, going to industry events, getting to know some of my competitors, because I'm a very open person, and I love sitting chatting with a competitor about how they're doing something.
Yeah.
And when you find one who's that open too, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know,
it is a pretty close industry in that respect. It's sort of friendly competition to a degree.
It is, and you know that makes it really kind of special. I think it is. It's a lot of fun. You know, what's the most challenging thing? I just think that's the industry in general, if you will. It's kind of a broad answer, but it's changing so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think not having the history with it, but getting to read about it. It seems like the last 5 to 10 years have changed more than the previous 30 probably did, I think, in any one respect. So it's...
Yeah, certainly e-commerce and the online channels of distribution are really seem to be shaking things up.
They are, and they're a serious threat to any manufacturer, unless they're an e-commerce manufacturer. And just the fashion side of it, it's become so much more of a fashion industry, which really, from my perspective, I see it where the consumer has stepped up to drive it more than anything. I mean, it's not hard to see that we used to make certain product and put it in certain finishes and tell the consumer that's what they can buy. Well, they're not, that doesn't work for them anymore. They tell us what they want to buy, and we have to be able to make it, or they'll find somebody that will.
It seems like, we always hear the consumer is more educated than they've ever been about certain purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And furniture, no doubt, is among those purchases that they're more educated, they're more engaged. And I think it seems like that could be a good thing, particularly for a company like yours that has the ability to respond with sort of a palette. I think you said about 50 finishes or so.
50 plus, yeah.
And you continue to develop.
Yeah.
These as well.
Yeah, and that is certainly one of the things that does help. And you talk about the education of the consumer. Well, there's where your social media comes in too.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be engaging with them. You need to make them aware of your brand, of who you are. Get them seeking you out. You know, I still think with the e-commerce, I still think that a lot of consumers want to touch and feel this stuff. So, so you've got to find a way to drive them to that retail store. And
yes.
Then you've got to give them what they want when they get there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that you partner with your retailers in a way that helps drive traffic. I don't know if you like have a locator on your website.
We do exactly. Yeah. Yes, you can put in your location and it'll pop up the nearest dealers that to you, certainly to help people find where they can go buy the stuff.
Sure. Well, tell us. We talked about the company. this, you know, significant anniversary and what you're doing to stay competitive, and a little bit about what you're bringing to the table with your professional background. Tell us a little bit about yourself personally. What is it? What are some of the things that you like to do in your spare time? Do you have any particular hobbies or anything like that that you'd like to talk to us about?
Yeah, you know, I've been kind of fortunate. Like, travel actually is one of my big hobbies, and and obviously this industry allows it for a bit of that.
Yeah.
So that's always nice, and I do as much personal travel as I can and as time allows too. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. I just love exploring new places.
Yeah.
There's so much to see out there. And that can be right just in Canada, it can be in the U.S., it can be abroad.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way I spend a fair bit of time. And the other would be music. I've played the piano since I was, I think, 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
So music has always been a huge part of my life. It's a big thing in my family.
Yeah.
I was taught by my grandmother, and my father played the guitar his whole life in a band, and so that's always been kind of our big family thing
for
get-togethers. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So it's funny that this never came up in our discussions before, because I play guitar a little bit, professionally. But
I thought I knew that too, and I'm certainly not professional by any means. It's just more of a fun thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Now, do you play out in public any, you know, at all or anything like that?
I have over the years done a few things with some friends where we would do small events. No, I've never really been part of a band per se or anything.
Yeah.
It's just family and friends. You know, you're always you're sitting around, want something to do. Well, play a song on the piano. Somebody grabs a guitar.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, everybody's singing. And
it's just a
great way to pass the time. Like it's just a great hobby.
So. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's something you'll always have with you.
Exactly.
That's the thing that's cool about it.
I think I did know you play the guitar. I'm sure you do the same. You just pick it up.
That's right.
And you kind of don't have to think about anything else while you're doing
that's
it.
That's right.
It's really nice, yeah.
Now, I have to ask you this, sort of being into music myself a little bit. Do you compose any? Do you create at all? Or is that something you aspire to do? Or
no, it's a horrible thing. And my dad has said this for years, too. I know, you know, you hear a great song and you say, now, how did somebody hear that for the first time?
Yeah.
I really wish I had that ability, but I've honestly never had an original thought when it comes to music.
Well, that's okay.
There's two types of musicians, I think.
Yeah,
and I'm not the type that's going to have an original thought, unfortunately.
Well, that's okay. I mean,
that's why I'm in the furniture industry instead of the music industry.
Well,
guess,
yeah,
right?
me too. But it is definitely fun, because it's something you can always return to. And any particular places that you like to travel to? I mean, it sounds like you've got a pretty broad experience traveling and geographically across the country in Canada. Any particular places that you always like going back to?
Well, the Caribbean is just a fun spot for a winter getaway. But really, I've been... Europe is kind of the... really where I love. I've spent some time in a lot of different cities in Europe, and there's so much to see there. Prague is probably one of my favorite cities, believe it or not. It's just so old. There's so much to see. Italy is fantastic for touring. Switzerland with their mountains. Working on a trip to see Scandinavia late this summer, because that's always been on my list, just to see those places. But you know, I'll go anywhere. If somebody's going and I have the time and the ability, I'll say, well, why not?
Yeah, sure. That's right. And it's funny, we were talking about Europe. I don't know if it was last year or the year before that you all showed in Cologne.
Yeah, that was January of 2018.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, we took a gamble. Part of a. It was actually a Canadian government initiative that we were part of that allowed us to do it, and we showed at the IMM in Cologne, Germany, and that was, you know, that was looking afield to see is there a market for our furniture there, and I think we found out the short answer is yeah, there is. The longer answer is it's going to be a difficult process to get there.
Yeah,
so
sure,
that was
sure.
that was the start to that, and you know, we're still working on on that, but it's going to be slow, you know, to the, there's certain logistics involved, obviously, with pre-assembled furniture, the transportation of them, and all of that. But it's, but it was certain, it was really eye-opening, and it was, you know, it, that probably helped influence some of our style directions too. Just, you know, being able to walk that building with all of the different exhibitors and, you know, see what the newest styles and trends are in the European market. So
cool. Well, I thought of Cologne because we were talking a little bit about Europe, and that's another city. It's I got to go to Frankfurt for the first time about 2 years ago, and it's just like being in a different world when you're over in that part of the world.
Yeah, Germany is amazing. I've been to Munich for Oktoberfest, and I've been to some of the smaller towns, and then seeing Cologne, which I knew nothing about it, but it's a gorgeous city.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just fun to see different things.
Any pets or anything like that that you take care of, or any animals?
I don't. I kind of tell people that my favorite type of pets are other people's.
Oh, okay.
So, I like animals.
Is it like grandkids or something?
Yeah.
Like
grandkids. That's right.
You could
see them, but give them back.
That's right. Yeah.
No, I like animals, but again, it's just, you know, it doesn't fit my lifestyle.
Yeah. To, sure.
If you're constantly with work requirements, you're away.
It's
just true. it would be difficult. So
yeah, I was just curious.
Yeah.
Now here's a question we like to ask, just to kind of mix things up a little bit. Is there anybody that you would most like to meet in history who's currently not living, and why? I'm not sure that's a question that you had a chance to mull over any.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's music related.
Oh, okay.
You certainly have musical influences, and quite honestly, my musical tastes and roots are really much in classic rock.
Okay.
And either you're a Beatles fan or you're not, and I am.
Yes.
And you know, I would have loved to meet John Lennon.
Yeah.
Just because of his pure talent, it would have just been interesting to get to chat with him, to, you know, to sit in the room and watch him create, if you will. I mean, I've seen Paul McCartney in concert, so I get to see that side of it. But that's just, you know, that's just that one person who influenced my love of music.
Yeah.
So he would be, you know, that would certainly be somebody that I think would have been interesting to get a chance to meet.
Yeah, and he was pretty versatile too in terms of being able to play both electric and acoustic guitar
and
I believe piano as well. You could hear that in a lot of his compositions.
Absolutely. And just you know, like I said earlier, he had so many original thoughts.
He
got to hear the songs first, and I just it would just be really interesting to understand how that happened.
And is that some of the stuff that you play, you know, or
I play a lot of that.
Yeah.
I play a lot of keyboard inspired people, so a lot of Billy Joel, Elton John, you know, those people. I've seen them all in concert, because you know you have to do those things.
Oh yeah, that's right. I hear you. I'm on the same page.
Because it's fun. Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. So
well, good. This is great. I really have enjoyed sitting here talking with you. It's a little different conversation than we normally have, but
a little bit, but it's not.
But still, you know, touches on some familiar points and some new ones. And again, Tom Russell filling in on as a guest on the record with Luke Simpson, president and CEO of Durham Furniture. Again, Luke, thank you so much for being with us. We've really enjoyed this, and look forward to hearing more great stuff about Durham as we go forward.
Well, Tom, thank you very much. I've appreciated the opportunity.
All right. Thank you.
Cheers.
Take care.